This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think Steve is told this in his book, Annie, where I went into his room with England and asked him to sign for United.
You tapped up Stevie G?
Shake his hand outside the stadium of life. I see him getting his car, I get a text. I write, thanks for the chat, I'm going to Bolt.
I parked next to this car that was parked on the wrong side, massive 7 Series BMW. He came out, it was Dennis Bergkamp. I said, what's happened? He said, yeah, it was just signed. I was like, Dennis just signed.
I was like that yesterday, I saw him in Selfridges.
Sunderland, people would say, oh, it's bleak.
Where was Dwight York when you tried to sign him?
York, he was in Sydney.
On holiday, I'll be playing.
The pips in the tangerine are a disgrace.
I tell you.
Ian, you lied to me, you brought it. Cara.
Oh.
Seriously?
Oh, that old thing.
Cara, seriously? That's feel the weight of that.
Yeah. Beautiful.
I thought you said you never brought it.
Exactly, lied.
Oh. I lied.
Oh,
can't people tell lies anymore?
Oh, my God.
How beautiful. what's that made out of?
Yeah. I don't know. It says golden boot. Why don't I talk about anything else what it's made out of? It's gold.
It's beautiful.
Jesus, what's wrong with you?
Can't believe I never...
Why are you being like that with me, Gary? Why are you belittling my boot?
I love that boot.
Not as much as me.
How many goals did you score, right?
That season, for that one. I scored 29 in the league and 5 in the cup, so 35 that year.
Well done.
How many pens?
Can't remember. I took the pens towards the end. I took a couple of pens, but they were...
Takes it away from me.
It doesn't. Give me my boot. Shut your mouth. Give it to me, you.
No, let me ever feel like
Roy, why are you eating dairy milk already?
How can you take that away when...
It's beautiful.
You know what? Do you know what's good about this one?
We've got Pips in Satsumas again.
Gary Lineker was on. Gary Lineker was on it as well.
We're in January now, and we've still got Pips in Satsumas.
Patrick on the last day.
Yeah, you done him, didn't you?
Yeah. And the thing is, because he was retiring that year...
He had to score a hat-trick, or you?
I did.
Who?
Because he was Gary Lineker. Because he was retiring that year. He won everything, I think. He won everything. Player of the year. I thought I was really close for that season.
What year was that, right? Sorry.
It was 91-92. The season just when the Premier League, when it just started.
So a few weeks before, he's got player of the year because everyone thinks he's going to be top goal scorer.
Yeah. And like we went into the last game, Southampton, and he was 2 in front. I think he was... No, he's 1 in front and then he scored. So he's 2 in front. So I needed to score a hat-trick. I didn't even know at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I mean? When I came in and knowing that it would have been wrenched from him.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It made me happy because I thought I was hard done by that season because I went from Palace to Arsenal, everyone saying, I'll see how he gets on.
92?
Yeah. So it was a season
You never went the Euros, did you?
No. Or? Won the Golden Boot, didn't even go to the Euros.
Yeah,
it was
good.
This was good for me to see instead of that.
Ian, that's the coolest outfit I've seen you have on.
Seriously?
It's really nice, that.
I like that.
Yeah.
Pretty green.
I see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Liam Gallagher, my guy.
Yeah, that's nice.
Does he still own it?
Love Liam Gallagher.
Does he still own it? He released.
I don't know if he's
released a collaboration.
We've added that.
He saw what you had on last week. And you went for that, didn't you?
Nice guy. I'm always a week behind. I'm always a week behind. I'm wearing pretty green in 2 weeks.
Girl, I was just saying, that looks really good. That looks really good on you, girl.
No, this is not what
you... I like the double zip.
He had the little T-shirt. The little, you wore it on Match of the Day. Yeah, and then
I've worn this before. This is... No, it's simple.
It's just boss.
You look good, bro. You look good.
Christmas sales.
Did you do wrong?
No.
You have a stylist, though, don't you?
I don't have a stylist, Roy.
You don't need a stylist. He's sitting across me.
No, there's a guy.
Just look at what I'm wearing.
He hasn't got a stylist, but there's this guy at Sky.
There's a guy at Sky, basically, who...
One of the cameramen or something?
tries to influence the way in which...
Tell them what you did at the start of the season with them.
Oh, I brought... So I don't throw clothes away, right? So I've got clothes from, like, 10, 12 years. Who'd have thought it?
So what did he do?
I brought in all my clothes down from London.
Every
in my car.
Any bit of clothes.
Everything I had. Like, everything. All my suits, everything. Right. And hung them all up and I said, right, what goes with what? What needs throwing away? What needs... And I literally went through it all with him.
All your clothes.
So he hasn't got a stylist?
I want some advice, Roy.
It's a stylist.
Why don't you get rid of clothes? Why are you holding?
Roy's got a stylist. I saw Tim a couple of weeks ago from...
You're an egg, you are.
Yeah, but he goes to his little shop.
Close,
he goes to a little shop in Audley Edge and Rob goes in, you know what I mean? Roy doesn't usually smirk like that.
To be honest, I've got a stylist, my lady Jess.
Yeah, you have a stylist?
Of course I do.
Oh, right, wow.
Help me with my stuff.
And Cara goes to a shop in Liverpool called Sarto?
Sarto, Union Sarto. 22. Little shops.
Is it a cheeky shop?
Yeah, little cheeky number. Little cheeky number.
Do you get a deal?
A little bit of discount, yeah. Bit of cash.
Hey, man, thanks.
I get rid of this.
No. Fist me, man. You're looking out for me.
I can't believe I'm
here. And that's what you need in these kind of environments. People are watching
your back. These double podcasts are throwing me a little bit, aren't they? You know, your food, your routine. I'll tell you what throws me.
When you do the double ones, you're not quite sure what to invoice. Is it a one? Is it a two? Is it double up? You know what I mean?
Lots of rules.
Paddy was good today, wasn't he?
Brilliant. Paddy was great, wasn't he? Mm. It was so good. See,
I think that voice is just funny.
It's like Bolton.
Yeah, that voice is just... It's just funny.
I watched one of the Phoenix nights as well. You know, I remember the one when he got stuck on the stair lift.
Yeah. Peter Gay.
Watching that show, man, I was dying. It's amazing. It's comedy gold. Great old English comedy, that is.
You should watch.
Fun. Northerners.
There is no comedies
anymore. Do you ever watch the bloopers of that stuff when they're trying to do it, lads? That Paddy McGuinness stuff.
Yeah,
Phoenix
nights. How did they get anything done? How did I actually get it done when you're like... Same thing, I was watching Ricky Gervais when he's doing The Office and he's doing that stuff because he does a lot of improv still. Yeah. How did they get it done when you're laughing so much?
My favourite one in Phoenix Lights when the Bolton fans get off the bus and they go, how far away are they?
Yeah.
Where's Jill?
What's she doing?
Jill.
Hey, it's a woman's prerogative to be late, man. Just chill, bro.
Yeah. Don't hurry.
Do I need something?
Got you. Yeah, got you. Yeah.
And what? Did you get that Lampard? Did you leave it?
Did you get them to send it to your house? The Lampard answer because you didn't let it go. Yeah.
No, I've not asked them to send it to me, but I asked five or six people I trust in this room after Jack over there, and Jack said that you definitely said it.
Jack knows.
Jack said he said it.
Of course he said it.
But I thought it might have been one of them where, like, you've said, like, Bergkamp, and he said Lampard.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Kieran. Oh!
You're OK there, Kieran?
You all right?
Just too much in the nozzle.
He's gone pretty green. Is that pretty green?
Get a flat white coffee.
Look at that.
Look, that's what we do.
Whose stuff is it?
Down with the Kids. Well, it used to be.
Liam Gallagher's.
But it was good. It was good. No, I'm buzzing. I'm with you guys.
You look radiant.
Honestly.
You look radiant,
Jill.
You're glowing.
So I had some time off in December. Lapland with the children's charity just for the day. And then I went to New York for 5 days. Yeah. So I got back.
A League of Their Own.
Our League of the One, yeah, I was in Mexico for 16 days with that. That was funny.
Yeah, so that was probably more why you've been around than one day in Latvia.
Yeah, you just mentioned a charity walk.
Shut up.
No, I do not a charity walk as well, but I don't kind of mention it. I'm just putting it out there in case.
No, it wasn't charity work. I just got invited to Lapland, but it was good fun. It was good fun. Have you been?
No.
Can't imagine you in Lapland. You'd be hating every minute.
Was it stressful? Yeah.
What is it? What's not stressful? What's not stressful?
It's an early start.
What's that? Because
it's a long flight. There's some idiot singing Merry Christmas to everybody. There is. You get on this bus.
He's called Santa.
In a red outfit on. Just clown, get down.
Oh, God. No, it is a good day, though. It is. It's magical.
But it's tiring, is it? Let's not kid ourselves. You've been to Lapland?
No.
Stay, no.
Sleep over.
I was so tired.
I've never been. You've got to go. You're leaving at like 5 a.m.
I got picked up at like 1:45 in the morning. No. And the guy's going, when we get there, Joe's going to put a football match on in Lapland. And then he's singing on the plane. I'm like, I just need to have a sleep.
Oh, no. But we wore all the stuff. They tell you it's going to be freezing. So we wore that when I was with my kids. And we wore it on the flight. But we never knew you could get the stuff over there. So we're on the flight. Big bubble jackets on now. You see, yeah, right,
that
is one.
So
it's Adidas Moncler.
Yeah.
Would have covered the whole plane, yeah. Was it Adidas and Gucci or Moncler?
Moncler.
Moncler,
yeah. Moncleasy, baby.
Oh, yeah, I heard about your big jacket.
You don't do that.
We'd watch it back.
No. I didn't stick my chest out. Gary said Moncler.
Remember you stood up and you stuck your chest out, do you remember?
I didn't used to stick my chest out.
You scored 2 at Yeovil one, didn't you? Yeah! The cup, do you remember?
I remember the goal
you scored. Was that the goal?
Was that the goal? The chip.
The cheeky chip, it was.
Yeah, I think that was my favourite goalie. And the one against Everton.
Did you like that one?
Yeah, well, I didn't at the time. You know what?
The
goalkeeper for Yeovil was Chief.
No, but the chip was right in the
stanchion. We asked Rice to bring his golden boot.
That was against Swindon.
Was it Swindon?
That is cool.
I just saw him.
His confidence is after the lead.
I know. And the one you got at Leeds.
Wow. That's the one. You know what I love about the one at Leeds?
That's stuck under your foot.
It was stuck under there. I remember, like I said, Dave Seaman used to say, the closer you get, the goalie's got to see if you've had a look at him yet so he can see where he is. So Dave Seaman said, you know where the 18-yard box, you don't need to know where the goal is, you know where the goal is. Yeah. So I never took, my head never went up at all, so John Lukic is probably doing that. And then bam, chipped him because I saw the 18-yard box. Yeah. And I said, yes, bro, that's what you get. That's what you get for not doing your job properly against the right stuff.
Okay. The right stuff?
Sounds
you can't. Sounds like a new brand or something.
It's so nice when you do it on my face, because when my mum used to do it, perhaps she used to use Vaseline. It was like, she was so rough, man.
She was a gentle.
My mum, hold your face like that, you know? Cream in your face.
So that was quite nice then.
You know what I mean? That was really nice. But then, you know, you got flies and everything stuck to your face because you've got so much Vaseline on it.
Yeah, we're not using that today, don't worry.
Thank you very much.
I think you won that one. Are we
going to
start the show?
This is it.
Are we on? I'm ready for you.
Right, let's go.
Come on, we've wasted enough time there. Oh my God, it's 10 o'clock. How was that wasted?
Why was it wasted?
It was nice. It's wasted time. It's not wasted
time. It's like warm up, like chat.
Jesus Christ, everyone's too busy to chat these days.
You're right. Unless it's on camera for Gary.
Welcome to Stick to Football, brought to you by Skybet. And I'm joined today by Roy Keane, Ian Wright, Jill Scott and Jamie Carragher, and we're going to be talking about recruitment and the transfer window. Right, let's go. So, we're in January, we're talking all things transfers. And I'm going to start with a simple question. Who should sign players at a football club?
Oh, good question.
But it should never be one. It should never be one person, Gary. But who has the final say on players at a football club?
Manager.
I'll go manager.
Disagree.
Do
you?
Why?
Let's debate it. Why do you think the manager, justify why you think the manager should sign, be responsible for spending £80 million and £20 million a year in salary for 4 years on a player when they're only potentially going to be there for a year, 2 years? Why should they be the one that signs a player?
They should have a big say in it, obviously.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's their style of play, surely. Yeah. They want a player that's going to...
Is it, or is it the club's style of play?
It should be the managers. They're working with them week in, week out. They're building a philosophy. I think it should be the manager.
So that, you're saying then, in respects of the club buying them, so you're buying them for the future, not for that particular manager. So then that manager, whatever his style of play or what he wants to do, If he ain't, what's he going to do? Because he wants players to execute what he wants to do. So if people are buying players for him and say, right, deal with him.
Yeah, but not every decision, lads, is going to be long term. You know, not everybody can go to a club or have a project. Mm. Sometimes there is a short, you know, obviously you get a lone player in. You know, there might be, if you're paying big money for a player, yeah. But I agree. I think there is this idea the manager should call the shots. But I think it's difficult. Put it this way, I've been a manager and I look back now and I bought players. Listen, I bought some decent ones, but I bought some. I look back and think, what was I thinking?
Didn't you have a panel of people?
Oh, yeah, you bunks it off, people. Of course, you have your staff and there's obviously a chief executive. Yeah, and of course, you have these casual conversations. But ultimately, yeah, it would come down to the manager and go, yeah, can we go with it? But then I've had it as well where I've been at a club where an owner has pushed for a player and I've been reluctant and the player's come in and also not been very good. So that,
how do you feel about that player when you didn't want him but he's in there and he's not doing well?
You're not too pleased about it, no, of course.
I think a really interesting one on this is Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, because when Jurgen Klopp came into Liverpool, there was this talk of a transfer committee. You know, FSG come in and said, we don't want this thing, we're just buying players left, right and centre, we want to put a director of football in. And a director of football or a football and CEO, if you like, they're thinking about the long term of the club. Whereas a manager is probably more often than not thinking of the short term. Because how often is a manager there? Yeah. Maybe 2 years at the most. But when you get a situation like Jurgen Klopp, where he's now been at the club for 8 years, so he comes in initially, transfer committee, it's really successful. The longer he's there, he almost becomes almost like the sporting director, doesn't he? Because he's never going to be sacked. He's probably going to be there another 2 years. So he is actually in there for
power, Jamie. Power? Has he got that power?
Yeah. He's actually got that as time goes on. So Liverpool have actually lost supposedly one of the best there, Michael Edwards, and I don't know how it's run or how they work, but there's no doubt Jurgen Klopp has now got more power in that situation. And I just think when he initially came in, and a really interesting one is Mo Salah, and Jurgen Klopp's quite open about this. He didn't want to sign Mo Salah. He wanted to sign Julian Brandt, who's a player who's still playing with Borussia Dortmund I think he was at Leverkusen at the time.
And Dortmund now.
Yeah, and Liverpool had tried to sign Salah when he went to Chelsea. So the people behind the scenes were still there. I was like, Salah then went to Roma, I think, or Fiorentina.
Yeah, Roma.
And they were very adamant that, no, we have to sign this player. So you can, and then you look at what Mo Salah's done, but it can easily go the other way. But I do feel that this idea that a manager should just buy every player, I don't think it's right, but I don't think a manager should be have a player pushed on him and almost like and you always get that thing in the media with fans now that I don't like, and managers sometimes play up to it. It's like, I didn't sign him. Yeah. It's as if like he turns up with his boots, you know, at 9 o'clock, and he's just like, who's this?
Is there any right or wrong way? Is every club different?
No, but I just think, I don't think a manager should be able to just go and do what he wants. And I do think what's happened at Man United is a little bit worrying in that it feels it feels like he's just bought every player he knows.
You said the manager should have the final say and should sign the players. Are we in agreement that Erik ten Hag should sign the players for Manchester United, or that Louis van Gaal should sign the players for Manchester United?
Not on his own. No, I think there's got to be people you bounce things off.
Why do you think it shouldn't be the manager?
I'm coming at it from an owner's perspective, that you employ a head of recruitment who you think is the best guy out there at spotting players and spotting talent that will bring value to your club. You've got a sporting director equally who will obviously be thinking the same way. Their loyalty is to the club, but also a loyalty to make sure we win games. So then that we're aligned. A manager's job is purely to think about the immediate short term and getting results for himself, i.e. Casemiro is an example. Perfect example of a short-term signing that's going to cost in the long term. That signing should never have gone through a good sporting director, a good owner, a good head of recruitment. That should never have gone through that signing, in my opinion. Mm. That should be a veto, bang, gone. So for me, you've got
What reasons are you saying? Because it was so expensive and his wages, you mean?
Yeah, it doesn't fit the long-term
wages.
But when he
first went to Man United, I know
he's a good player.
The fee was huge and he signed, was it a five-year deal?
Mm. Yeah, on 20 million a year.
I think the fee was crazy, I think. Yeah. And obviously,
the wages are crazy. And the length of contract is crazy. You've got head of recruitment, and you've got a sporting director, and you've got a team of scouts who've probably watched between them 1,000 games in a season. And they might have watched the players that you're looking to sign 15, 20 times live between them all. You've got 15, 20 times live between all the scouts and coaches. Maybe more. Maybe 100 times. You've got a coach and a manager who's literally been concentrating on getting results, coaching his players, assessing the pre-match, post-match, fixed on results and everything that's going on with the media. He's never probably even watched these players live. And you're trusting that guy over another football guy who's got a really good brain to make a decision. And I just feel like, for me, the perfect scenario for me at Salford would have been, I never really got a chance to implement it because you do get dragged from pillar to post as an owner. So I wanted it to be the owner and Karen, the chairman. We had a financial veto. If it didn't fit the budget, it can't come in. Mm. That's a fact, right? But the manager has a veto that if he doesn't want a player, that he has a veto as well. But also the sporting director on behalf of their recruitment, they also have a say to say, look, this player's not right for us in the long term. And they have one. So you've all got a veto in essence. What you'd like as an owner is where the sporting director, the head of recruitment and the manager are all on the same page. Mm. But if they're not, if you've got your sporting, imagine I'm an owner, this happened quite a bit. You've got your sporting director and your head of recruitment saying, I'm not sure, we've watched him a lot. But then the head coach says, I used to have him at Grimsby and I want him because I know him. Yeah. That's the scenario that exists. That's what Ten Hag has put United. And you thought, what?
Yeah, Ten Hag. Ten Hag said that he's not coming unless that's one of his stipulations.
He's
walked
with, Anthony, 90-odd million pounds. He's worked with him. Is there not a better winger for
Gary,
better value?
It's the hardest part of football, recruitment, getting lads in. And you've just mentioned different people. But then you can have too many opinions. We could sit here every weekend. We watch games and we watch a game and we see it a bit differently. I think he done well here.
But who does the owner go with as the last opinion?
Well, who does he trust the most?
The person though on the ground who's working with the team, because you need to bring someone in who's good for environment and stuff like that as well. Like we've seen so many clubs just sign players based on technical ability and all this. Surely you need people that's good for the club as well. That's why I think the manager will know what they need there on the ground every single day.
But Jill, sometimes when you bring a player. I've been there. Sometimes you don't know really a player until he walks into your building. Yeah. I've made loads of phone calls. What's he like? Great lad. Good lad. You're like, obviously you go, no, you do. Or sometimes you go, I'm not sure. I remember I was trying to get Cissé to Liverpool. And everyone said to me, no, I'm not a great lad. But I still took a chance. And again, beggars can't be choosers. You think we need a striker. And he's one of the best lads I've ever come across.
Yeah.
And there was other lads I rang and went, really good. And he walked, as soon as he walked in the building, I went, I'm not sure about these fellas. So you really still don't know a player, honestly, until he's walked into the building.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you told the story about Chimbonda, or Niall Quinn told the story about Chimbonda, didn't you? What happened there?
No, well, Chimbonda, I brought him in again. People said, don't touch him. And I didn't listen. I thought, well, we need him. He's got quality. He's played in the Premier League. And he came in, and he was hard work. And I'm being really polite. He was hard work. And he was, not a great lad around the place. He could play. And I didn't listen to people. I thought we needed him. But I remember I left Sunderland, I got a phone call from Spurs, somebody at Spurs, one of the coaching staff, we're thinking of bringing Chimbonda. And he'd already been at Spurs. And I went, I wouldn't be sure. The next day they bought him. Literally the next day, I think Harry Redknapp was the manager and they brought him in. I was like, so why ring people and get feedback? Mm. It's just, again, sometimes sometimes you have to take a gamble on a player. It's all right, I think, if you're a Man City or a Liverpool at the moment, they're doing really well and you can kind of pick a player. Liverpool go back to the United when we were there. You could maybe just pick one or two every summer. But when you're bringing loads of lads in and you're under pressure, and the pressure makes you make bad decisions.
I think that's a great point. And I don't want to keep going back to Liverpool, but Liverpool have basically competed with United and Man City over the last, say, 7 or 8 years with Klopp having less money. And I think a big thing that they've done is that if they haven't got the man that they wanted, they haven't panicked and then gone and got someone else. Yep. And I think that's what Man United did with Casemiro. They wanted De Jong, I think it was, wasn't it, all summer. Mm. And at the last minute, we need to hold midfield player. Let's overpay for someone. You're now in a position where you're probably trying to sell them to maybe a club in Saudi Arabia. But Liverpool have done really well where they didn't get Virgil van Dijk in the summer. They didn't go, and even me, I was thinking, need to go and buy a centre-back. Yeah. They waited till January. Even last year, to be fair, a lot of criticism of the midfielders, they should have replaced them. The one they wanted went to Real Madrid. So it was like, well, that's the one we want. We're going to wait for the next one that we want. Yeah, and sometimes I think with the pressure of the media and certainly supporters, social media, some clubs sort of just panic.
They're obviously, like you say, with Jurgen, they trust Jurgen now because, you know, they're not going to buy somebody that's not going to fit into what he wants. And that's what you need.
But the manager also is buying into it as well there. He won't panic them also to go and get someone.
Exactly.
But I think once everyone's kind of upfront with each other, Gary, you mentioned it again, budgets come into it. I remember we got promoted with Sunderland. I wanted Bent. Bent was a Spurs. And I spoke to Niall when Bent would keep Sunderland up. Yeah. And I spoke to Niall and I went straight down the middle. He said, right, we can't afford it. Spurs were asking about 17 million or 80 million. I think we went up to about 12 or 13. He said, we can't do it right now. No problem. And he didn't come in. Listen, we stayed up a bit. I remember Brucey got him a year later. Sunderland had that year in the Premier League then. Mm. And they went and got him. And he was brilliant for Sunderland. So I think once the club says, no, we can't go there, I think sometimes it's when people are moving goalposts, and we see it with clubs all the time. I think as long as everyone's up front with each other, if it's as simple as he's out of our range, particularly for budget-wise, then you back away. And what happens is then you do panic, and then you start going down. Everyone has a list. Mm. Liverpool.
Yeah. Mm.
Salford will have a list, but I tell you, you end up going down the list.
That's the problem. What happens is you get so go into a window, all good intention, all on the same page. And what happens is you go into a window thinking, right, we need four players, and you pick the profile of the player that you want. He's got to be 6 foot. He's got to hold the ball up. He's got to score 10 to 15 goals. He's got
Gary. Tell me,
No, obviously, you're looking for that profile of player. And then basically, what you want, your head of recruitment and your sporting director and your team of scouts to go out there and bring back three or four really good options. And they bring back those three or four options to the table. The problem is, if you don't get those three or four because they're not available of some kind, or the manager doesn't like them, that's when you end up in a spin.
Absolutely.
And then you're well, he's available, and then the agents are involved. Are involved, and they're on to you.
Your experience of that, do you think you would be better to just stand back and go, no?
Absolutely. Yes. Honestly, when I look back now on reflection, and I think that, to be fair, towards the end, obviously, I'm not in at Salford anymore on the day-to-day, but from my point of view, towards the end, I was moving away from head coach recruiting players and being involved in the process because I knew that we'd recruited badly a couple of times in terms of just bringing players in. A bad recruitment window costs you for two or 3 years.
Absolutely.
You can't get them out.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's the hard part.
It's about recruitment in. How do you get players out?
Gordon Strachan was manager of Celtic, and Gordon had a bit of success, but he said he backed away from all transfer. He went, I've bought too many bad players. Gordon held his hand up and said, I'm not good at spotting players and bringing players in. No, he'd obviously had some success in terms of bringing players in when he was at Coventry or whatever, but he got to the stage where he went, I'm backing away from all
so
that.
So then he just, whatever they brought him in,
he said, I'm backing away from it. I'm sure he had some sort of conversations, but didn't get involved. And that's an experienced manager.
It's mad, though, in the women's game, I think, because obviously the manager does make a lot of the decisions, I think. Obviously, back in the day, you didn't have all them people involved. So usually it would be like someone would play well against you the next year. Wow. You're sitting next to them in the changing rooms because they'd had a good game against you. So maybe that's why my kind of thought process is the manager makes the decisions. But it's crazy to think how many layers there is in the men's game of bringing in a player.
Does Emma at Chelsea, or obviously she's leaving, but does Emma at Chelsea, would she sign every single player?
I think she would have the final say. I might be incorrect, but I think she would have the final say. She knows what that team needs, and I think she's thinking about it. She always stays ahead of the game with her signings, and I think that's why she's been so successful.
How many phone calls would you get, Garrett? When you're involved at a club,
I'd stop taking
them. And you know what the madness is? You might come in one day and there's people ringing, they get in touch with you through the chief executive or the scouts or people who work with you. You might have no intentions of thinking we need a right back, but someone will throw a name and you go, actually, he's not paying. Spurs are very good. I remember we tried to get a couple of lads from Spurs. It ended up getting three players from Spurs. It had to be three of them. We were only really interested in two. They went, to make the deal happen, you have to take three. And you end up doing the deal.
Buy two, get one free.
No, he wasn't free. Spurs, why not?
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Did you ever have that one? Because I've heard about this before, almost the old manager's trick where you wake up and you say you don't want to play, but on the back of a bad result, you come in Monday and you'd sell everyone and you'd buy everyone. And then the manager gives you a phone call knowing you've had a bad result over the weekend and you know you're ready to
do. Of course, the dynamics, every week it might change. You might go, I think we're fine. A couple of defeats. And what happens? Pressure. Mm. You panic, not just from the manager, his staff would be coming in. I had a phone call from that. He's available. I remember Anelka was always available at Bolton. We'd think, I remember all these chats. You're like, yeah, he's a good show. An hour later, I go, no, forget about him. He's on 110 grand a week. You're like, for fuck's sake, don't be wasting it. You waste so much time and energy. And again, you have a list. Again, I remember sitting down with Nigel when we got promoted. The list of players we had after getting promoted, we were like, oh, he'd be good for us. Get him in. And they were realistic. I'm not talking about lads from Madrid or... We just, as the summer went on, it was like, no.
Yeah, the list, yeah, the list exactly. Down, that's what happens. You got four lined up on your iPad in one position.
You do become desperate. And when you get desperate, you don't get any of them. Not good.
They're not available.
No. But the strange thing, I think, with Ten Hag, with the players he's brought in, a lot of them he's worked with.
Yeah.
That's the bit. I know something you have
to worry.
You don't have to, you're not going to sign
everyone. Does he know the level in Holland?
Obviously, they've not, that's, of course, the level is different. We're well aware of that. And when people say they've played at a big club in Ajax or whatever, but Man United and Ajax, come on, let's get real. So again, I go back to it. It's the timing or the fit. The person. Sometimes a player can be really good at a club, and you have done your homework, and he comes in and it just doesn't happen. They don't settle in the area. I go back to again my own experience. Signing Sunderland, people would say, "Oh, it's bleak." Remember, I'm trying to get Yorkie back. It's a lovely place when you go up. No, it is. If you're a footballing person, Sunderland's a great club. The nicest people ever meet. But yeah, it's a family decision for people. And players have said to me, they've turned down Sunderland. My wife doesn't want to live up. They've said it to
me. Where was Dwight York when you tried to sign him?
York, he was in Sydney.
On holiday, I was playing.
he was playing. I rang Yorkie. Remember, Yorkie, looking out the window up at Sunderland. Look at my office. I'm looking, Yorkie, you know, whatever the time difference. And he was like, right. I went, do you fancy? But I knew Yorkie loved his football. I give him, I know he liked partying. But I knew Yorkie loved his football. He's over Sydney. He's a franchise player. And he was like, right, you want me? He said, I've got a penthouse in Sydney Harbour. He probably had a Lamborghini there. He said, you want me to come back? You want me to go to Sunderland? I went, that's exactly what I want you to do. Because honestly, I knew. And he went, all right, that's a big challenge, Yorkie, come get Sunderland. And Yorkie was brilliant, but he was a footballing person. I give Yorkie that. He loved his football. Yeah. But he was in Sydney. But again, proper football people would look at Sunderland as a great club. But other players, definitely, they've taught me. He says, my family don't want to move to Sunderland. You go, well, okay, that's fair enough. That's part of the package.
But you, I just thinking about, you signed a few players that you did know and you had at United, didn't you? Signed Yorkie.
Yorkie came in. When I first
Johnny Evans.
Johnny obviously came in first on loan, but I signed lads from Celtic. Andy Dan Cole. Barger, Rod Wallace. Yorkie, Coley came up a bit later. Liam Miller, God rest his soul.
Danny Simpson got up?
Simo came up for a while, yeah. He came up, yeah. So, but I felt comfortable knowing them lads and they were available. Dave Connolly brought from Wigan, yeah. And then when I did go to the lads I hadn't worked with before, yeah, that backfired.
Talk to us about Arsenal. You're nearest to Arsenal now in terms of what Edu's doing, but go back to sort of Arsene Wenger and what would happen back then, because he transformed when he first came in. Yeah. I mean, the recruitment, Arsenal were pretty average for a period of time before he came. All of a sudden, Petit, Overmars, Vieira, Anelka, it all of a sudden just transformed into oh my God, what's this?
It was all Wenger. It was everybody he knew from that Clairefontaine and everything like that. So it's really strange simply because when Wenger was coming, he'd already sent Patrick Vieira. He came with Remy Gard. And, you know, when we started to see Patrick training, we realised, wow, what's going on? This guy is amazing. You know, so we didn't feel, like Remy wasn't so, we wouldn't feel so much about Remy Gard, and Gilles Grimondi came in. But like Wenger was in charge of all of that, him and David Dean. Him and David Dean down the side. Same with Platy came in as well, David Dean. But like, yeah, when you look at all the signings, there wasn't nobody apart from David Dean and Wenger involved.
Yeah, but you just mentioned three players there. Sorry, right? But one came in, you were like, I like to look at him. But there was other lads came in. I think you have to be careful that you look at every signing.
Yeah, but I think Wenger, that he probably...
Ferguson. But they obviously got a lot wrong as well.
Yeah, but because you look at Remy Gard, he's injured quite a few times, and Gilles Grimondi was a kind of like a squad player came in. But they came in probably to help Patrick through.
When I look back at that, I always think, in this day and age, everybody, a scouting department or a manager, they almost feel like they know everything that's going on around the world.
Yeah.
Wenger just felt ahead of his time.
Yeah, because he had a march on everybody in respects of all the French side of it. He had a march on everyone because, look, Manny Petit came in. Not long
but did
after
all
that.
Hit the ground running, these
Absolutely.
Guys?
Absolutely.
Did Vieira,
to be honest,
was Vieira...
Vieira, I remember, right?
I'm trying to remember when they first
Vieira came in.
Was this first game at Blackburn?
No. It was at home.
Thierry Henry struggled for a while, didn't he?
Yeah. But like with Patrick, When Patrick came in, Patrick's first game, I think someone got injured, I can't remember who it was. Patrick came on as a substitute, we played in Sheffield Wednesday, and just blew everyone away. Because when Patrick came, because of his size, everybody thought he was centre-half. And you know, when he was training, he'd be training just like, just knocking it about, he's fine, you know, and then he'd extend that leg or he'd just go past people. But when he went into midfield, we hadn't seen anything like that. And in that particular game, he was the fans and everybody realised, we've got something.
He wasn't that good.
You've definitely got something.
But you'd actually got Vieira from AC Milan.
Yeah.
So it wasn't... Yeah. They'd seen him. I'm not sure exactly where they got him from, but it obviously hadn't quite worked out at AC Milan, but people must have... AC Milan obviously...
Yeah, but the thing is, remember as well, we got Thierry from Juventus when it weren't quite... We got Dennis Bergkamp from Inter Milan when it weren't quite happening.
Was Dennis before?
Dennis came with Bruce Rioch, but again, David Dean was the one who was making all those moves. So it was David Dean, because you look at Bruce Rioch... Well,
who was the head scout then at Arsenal? Who was the guy that basically was getting overlooked if these two were running
it? Steve Rowley.
So was he having any input whatsoever? Or?
He probably did. But like for Dennis, for Patrick... You know,
Dennis was big money, wasn't he? Whereas the other lads seemed to be under...
Yeah, but 7 million.
Was that a lot? That was a lot.
At the time, it was like 95.
Yeah, so Collymore had gone for 8.5, which was the record in probably just England.
Because when Dennis came, again, it's like I say, I always say with the signing of Dennis, it was like when you watch Spider-Man and that, bam, spider bites him and the DNA changes. That's what happened with our club.
It's amazing when a good player comes in, you get a...
Honestly, and the thing is, people told the story, but we actually met in a petrol station. I was going up to do stuff. Dennis was, because he drove everywhere, obviously, Clackett Lane, petrol station. And I parked next to this car that was parked on the wrong side, massive 7 Series BMW. He came out, it was Dennis Bergkamp. I said, what's happened? He said, it was just signed. I was like, Jesus Christ, Dennis just signed.
I was like that yesterday. I saw him in Selfridges in Manchester.
But like, it was the excitement, Roy, knowing that I'm going to be playing with him. Yeah. Because I know that, like you rightly said, we were going through some fallow years, you know, in that time, once, you know, from 92, then everything that happened with George Graham and, you know, me and Stuart Houston and then Bruce Rioch. It was, we weren't doing anything. We weren't really challenging. When he came, ramped things up, and then obviously Bruce Rioch left, and then Wenger. When he did come, then Patrick came, then Remy, then Nicolas Anelka came.
You know, you're going places, aren't you?
And you just start to feel it. It kind of re-energised us.
Yeah. You know what I love about that, though, that you said when he came in, I'm getting to play with him and I'm excited. You get some signings that come in and players spit the dummy out, like, they're going to take my place. And straight away, they've lost the shirt. But I love how you were, like,
honestly,
embracing it. Everybody. I'm going to get better.
We heard Yap the other day, when Yap came, and we also signed Dwight York that summer. And Jesper Blomqvist. Now, talk about three really good players coming into your club, and it gives everyone a lift.
Yeah.
And there's also the other side, a player will come into your club, and straight away you go, I don't think they're up to it. You must have had
give them a week, don't you? A week in training.
Well, the thing is,
hey, the boxes, you know, in the middle, he's not for us. Yeah. But when new players come in, you go, it lifts everybody.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
There is excitement.
It's amazing.
Fantastic.
It is. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. Well,
just finish on Edu and what they've done now differently.
Well, the thing is, it's again, remember when there was a time...
Is Edu signing the players, or is Mikel?
No, Edu and Mikel.
Together?
Yeah, absolutely. But remember that not too long ago when Mikel was head coach, and now they said, right, Mikel's in charge. He's in charge of everything, him and Edu. They work very tightly together.
I say this because Mikel obviously has still got to establish himself as one of the elite coaches. Mm-hmm. He's doing brilliantly well, one of the best of the young coaches that's gone into a job. Should he be given that responsibility as the guy who is responsible for signing players with Edu?
I think if you look at Mikel and his persona, he's somebody that can probably deal with that. He wants that.
Yeah.
He's not a manager that's like, he's going to make excuses about this not happening. Like, he's doing everything he wants.
But if you're doing that, do you have to then win the league this season, or is he... If you're bringing him £300-500 million of a players and you're being given your head, what point does he have to win?
Well, you say what point do you have to win? But we're still chasing down the Manchester City side at doing what they're doing. You know, you say we're now in a position where we're a decent team and we look like we can challenge.
Yeah.
We can make something happen. That's what you want him to do. I don't think that any manager like a Mikel Oz comes in and you say, you have to win now because you've signed them. It's because I inflated the price.
How long do you wait, though? If you're an Arsenal camp, we keep discussing it. You look where City are after their brilliant season last year and just coming off, you go, well, there's your chance.
Yeah.
This Arsenal must be for that money they've invested.
Yeah, but then you look at last season and you have to say from last season to this, you have to hope that they learned something from that simply because last season they fell
but
away.
But they are stronger than last
now,
year.
This
aren't
season,
they?
There's
it looks
so much
what Arsenal have had to do, and I think if you go back from when Arteta came in, I'm not sure who was exactly at the start bringing the players in. But do you remember that summer where they brought older players in? They brought David Luiz in, they brought Willian. Yeah. There was a fullback, I think, from Southampton. There was agents in the background.
Yes,
and I don't know if it was Cedric, a case of almost this hasn't worked. And you think of.
I think that was a time, James, just quickly so as I could get it. I think that was the time where Kier Trabchin was in around the place.
But my point is, I think for sort of Liverpool and Arsenal right now to try and catch City, so Liverpool had to sort of buy players who, like, Salah, you don't know, and it has to... You think of Arsenal signing Odegaard at the time, it hadn't quite worked somewhere else, he just goes bang.
Yeah.
Was Martinelli like 300, half a million quid or something?
Yeah.
It was virtually nothing, wasn't it?
It was that Christmas game, wasn't it, where he threw, I think that he left... Aubameyang, he put all the kids in. He put Isaka, Martinelli, Smith Rowe, and he just said, "I've had enough." I think it was like a Christmas game against Chelsea, I think, and I thought they were going to get a beat.
And we beat them.
And
but you go back to the recruitment lads as well. I think it's really important. It's remember, no agents are in touch with the club owners.
That's the thing.
Yeah, you're on about maybe Arsenal making sign. Some owners are attached to certain agents,
and
they will bring them in. And you're going, but whereas before you think. The manager's making the signings, he's making the contacts, or the chief executive.
That's why I gave up.
The top agents don't get
you must have experience.
The agents now going straight to the owner.
Yeah, I struggle.
And they're doing a sales pitch with them, and they're having meals with them, and they're the ones forcing the players on some of the managers.
I think
a lot of top managers sit here now. We heard struggles during the summer for people like David Moyes, established managers, and you just know it. They're having running battles with the people within the club who they're bringing.
Did you get on with agents, Roy, when they rang you?
I would tolerate them, yeah. But you'd
tolerate.
Yeah, but you had to because you might need them.
Yeah, even if they were like wasting your time, but you'd be polite with them. You go, maybe he's not for us or whatever. Or, listen, they'd be kind of sometimes Sunderland for them as they'd be ringing. You know, they'd be ringing 10, 15 clubs.
Yeah.
Talk to us about Benitez because you talked about someone who got power. He obviously won the Champions League, and then I think he had got control of the academy, got control of recruitment and everything in at Liverpool.
Yeah, so that was when you talk about a manager getting the power. So he comes in initially, but that's probably before there was days of what we see now and real big teams of recruitment. That was basically coming in, and what you're talking about with Wenger and David Dean, that's him and Rick Parry basically doing deals. The thing with Rafa was, if he never got exactly what he wanted, he wouldn't be shy in letting people know or feeding that out to the press. Yeah. So every year we're there with... Under Benitez, we had great success. We were probably one of the best, probably 4 to 6 teams in Europe. Every year we get to the Champions League final or a semi-final. You know, we're a really strong team. But it always felt like there was a disconnect in the club. It never felt like it always felt like there was a fight.
Right.
And that's what Rafa sort of enjoys that. I think that sort of constant conflict.
With the people upstairs.
Yeah, really. Mm. But, I mean, listen, there was definitely times where you think, could he have been backed a little bit more? There was other times when you look at some of the signings, you think, oh, you know, bringing players in. But what Rafa did really well, when he spent big, it was more often not successful. Right. When he spent sort of lower end of the market, it was almost like, you know, you come in and after about 2 weeks, you go, oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
it's 2 weeks, that long.
Yeah, we give him a couple of weeks at Liverpool, but...
that's when you look at our time at United, there were some stellar signings, obviously the ones like, you know, Rooney or Ferdinand, but then you look at sort of some signings, I know it was a different time, but like Schmeichel and Irwin, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Ji-Sung Park, who were brought in for really low money. They were unbelievable players when you think about it, you know what I mean?
That's good scouting. That's
unbelievable. Great. So they're the ones that I always look at that sort of kept the squad for 10 years, along with the young lads from the academy. So if you think about United's squad...
There's a smaller market then, though. The market's huge now, isn't it? Where the Premier League has grown.
Yeah.
And maybe United have been left behind in terms of... you see what Man City are doing at the moment, obviously. So maybe... And were players more attracted to Man United back then?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did Alex Ferguson have the final say? Did he sign you two?
Yes.
Did he?
Yeah.
It seems managers that are successful are the ones that
But Jill, you made the point earlier about asking players. Apparently Ferguson used to do quite a bit. He would ask players. I think they'd done it with me apparently before they signed me. They'd ask people who played against
me. Not if he's a good lad.
Right. They're all great lads at United. But they'd ask him, you played against him, so he would get feedback. Because that's a great...
Yeah.
He used to ask you, Gary, obviously, when you go away with England, what was Rooney like?
Yeah,
you get a close look at lads, their strength, their speed. And apparently when he spoke to Rob or Inti, when they were going, what was Bob's like playing against me. And they would say, listen, it was tough going. So he would be taking all that on board, yeah. Definitely.
Do you think the problem with Manchester United right now is because you go back to Ferguson and the problems, he probably did have the final say.
I think
he had a couple of scouts, didn't he? One of them was his brother. But it felt like a really small stable of people.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
It was his... I'm seeing that player. So he's running this whole club. So then every manager who's coming after him, and Man United thinking, we're not going to go to this new modern way of doing things because that guy was so successful doing it. So we're going to let Jose do what he wants. We're going to let Van Gaal do what he wants. We're going to let Eric.
They've tried it five times.
So why? Explain to me then, why have they still why have they not got that director?
Well, the one guy at United who came in who said they brought in Ralph Rangnick as a sporting director. They did. They brought him as a sporting director. He was just managing the team for a few months and he was going to get a sporting director's job at the end of the season. And he said that it needed open heart surgery and he wanted to get rid of like 10 or 12 of them out of the club, didn't he, and just rip it all up. Mm. They got rid of him because that scared him to death.
Yeah.
I think, you know what I mean, if you look at what he said, it was probably, to be fair, the most...
David Moyes, when David Moyes went in, David Moyes said the amount of players he was after, that they never got done.
Oh.
The deals, they never
got done. They can't get deals over the line.
They can't get them done. David Moyes, I think David Moyes was almost... beaten before he started because remember the big transfers first summer, they couldn't get deals on the last minute. I think they got Fellaini from Everton and almost from that was like, oh, is that it?
They got Mata and Fellaini.
I think they were talking about trying to get Cesc Fabregas as well.
Bale, Fabregas and someone else with the targets. I mean, you're absolutely, but just going back to Sir Alex and to Jurgen Klopp, I thought, I heard him say this a few years ago, they used to meet with the player before they sign them and sit down with them and have a couple of hours, and maybe even with a member of the family to understand. You could
Klopp does that.
Let's be clear, you can spot an arsehole in an hour if you speak to him, can't you? Mm.
Yeah.
You
two
can't.
Minutes.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
But that's the emotional intelligence.
You can spot someone, can't you?
Some
players, maybe that's at a Man United, Liverpool, but the more you go down, a lot of players and agents won't give you the time of day unless the deal's...
Should you ever sign a player unless you've sat in the house with them for an hour and a half and just understood what their home environment's like, what the family's like?
Yeah, that's probably a proper way.
Are they good people, you know what I mean?
People don't give you that chance sometimes. Yeah, they'll have options. They go... No, I'm not going to.
Yeah. But what drives?
It's like an interview. Yeah. Players go, listen, you're going to sign me or not.
You're right. The arrogance sometimes. You're right. That's when the club doesn't have control. But if you're actually asked for Alex Ferguson, Jurgen Klopp, you've got control.
Different animal, of course.
But actually,
I signed for United. I met obviously.
Well, the amount of money.
I meet him, and I met him. I came off to Manchester. I met Ferguson. I had to get a snooker with him, and kid up picked me up. And they're obviously sussing you out.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Nowadays, you're probably sitting at one of the 10 houses, so do you get that feel anyway of the family life?
10? Is that how many you
got? Jill,
does this put you off becoming a manager, Jill, in terms of obviously you want to go into obviously coaching and management?
It's just like a whole new world. I couldn't be bothered with like agents and stuff like that. That's what puts us off being a manager. I'd love to just be an assistant coach, just get out there on the grass coach, but managers and all these board things, it seems like there's just too much stuff going on. Like too many cooks spoil a broth. Yeah. Cooks, Macam. Yeah. But it's like, that's how I feel, whereas I think football should just be simple. There's a manager, they've got the team, they know what it needs. OK, I know you have to have certain conversations, but agents and stuff, I just couldn't be bothered with them.
It's too big now. It's too big. It can't be that small now.
Remember that story when I was at Sunderland? I've told you, it was at Matty Taylor I tried to get him up to Sunderland and he had options with, I think, Baltimore for him. And it ended up, he didn't want to move up. But I spoke to him up in the boardroom at Sunderland late at night. We didn't take him to the training or take him to the stadium. And I'm not knocking the lad, absolutely not. I thought, we're doing a sales pitch, Sunderland are going places. He taught me when I've got this, or Bolton. I was like, well, I think Sunderland's a better club than Bolton. That's my opinion, whatever. Bolton can argue all day. And I thought the chap went really well. Went outside, his car was over there, shook his hand. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. You know, good lad.
Well, did
you know,
did he say he's going to take it, or did he say anything then?
Let me finish.
Sorry.
I said, think about it. It's a big decision. I went, no problem. Yeah, I've got my family to think about. I said, no problem. Of course, never rush a player. I would never say, don't sign something. So I shake his hand outside the stadium. I see him getting his car. I get a text. So I can see him getting from the car. All right, thanks for the chat. I'm going to Bolton. Car drives past. No, literally, it's a big
decision. But he worked you out an hour.
Did a car drive bus? Yeah. You can't drive bus.
I'm cornered it, yeah, I'm back for it. No, but... He said it to me, his wife wanted to live in Manchester, which is fine, but you could have told me that 2 hours ago. Yeah.
We could have told you then. He's just got to the car.
It's crazy how you say about showing them the stadium and everything. So I went to a few clubs and we got shown the men's first team gym big it is and everything. And I signed, and on the Monday morning I turned up, we're in a porta cabin with like one set of dumbbells in the corner. And I was like, crazy.
Sold you. Sold you the dream.
Managers sell you a dream, I'm telling you.
Jill, you were...
I've sounded true.
A couple of weeks ago you were at the Sports Personality of the Year Awards and Mary Earps won... sports personality. It was an incredible achievement. What's happening? So how's it working in the women's game? She's at Manchester United. She's Manchester United at the moment. There's massive speculation about her leaving, being bought. How would that transfer come about in the women's game?
I think probably just on performance based, and then the Arsenal manager will probably kind of put in a bit of interest. But there'll be a lot of asking the girls what she's like at England and stuff like that. But I think with players like Mary, a lot of it's out there anyway, her personality and stuff like that. But if you had to ask us, I do think she might go to Arsenal. I think she's kind of...
Why, they've lost two major players to Arsenal then in the last couple of years, won't they?
Yeah,
how can that be? I'm thinking of a Man United fan here. How's that happening? Yeah. Obviously, they're not doing very well at the men's side of recruitment, but they're not able to keep the players in the women's team.
I think it's the contract side of it. If you've got a team that can offer more money...
Manchester United losing out money.
I think so. But you know what? It happened with us at Manchester City when we first went in. We reformed the team in 2014 and we had this three-year plan of like trying to win the treble. And we did it. We won the treble. And I remember thinking after them 3 years, we need to keep pushing, because when you're successful, that's when teams come after you. And I think we took our foot off the gas a little bit. We had the best manager, but we weren't signing the players because I don't think we had the budget to offer players contracts. And money is a big side of it. If somebody's, I don't know, getting half the money at one club and they get offered double at another, they probably are going to go. So the money side is a big thing.
I've just remembered that when Sir Alex asked me to, I think Stevie's told this in his book, hasn't he, where I went into his room with England and asked him to sign for United.
Who's Stevie G? Yeah.
I felt as though it was a little bit of a helpless sort of like, it was a...
When he asked you, I mean...
Honestly, no, I'd have lied.
I'm just worried, was I still at United?
Yeah. he just said, Roy's flagging a little bit. What would it have been, 2004? When did you leave United, 2000?
You tapped up Stevie G?
2004.
Well, it didn't work, did it?
Yeah,
so he was close to going to Chelsea.
So basically,
I
was meeting up with England for Euros, and he rang me and said, look,
you were tapping a player.
It's ambitious, he said, but...
Have a word.
I think his words would tell him, I'll go and fetch him and I'll walk him back down the East Lancs. Something like that. He's not bringing him back.
Wow.
And I went to see Stevie and he was quite categoric pretty quickly.
That was probably to you, though.
You can't.
No, no. But
how did you approach him?
Yeah, I got mistaken.
Knocking on with two cups of tea.
Yeah, but I remember it. I remember
like
the talk with Chelsea. How Liverpool fans took that, and they did. Can you imagine?
I went in to see Steve.
They heard it was United.
And he said, seriously, he said, I wouldn't get out of Liverpool, and my family would never get out of Liverpool. Those are the exact words to me. Yeah.
Wow.
And I always remember that.
See? That man knows.
Well, he knows Liverpool.
But there was all that stuff came up when he was linked with Chelsea, wasn't it? And this threats and all. Yeah. Wasn't all that.
That was just me.
No, that was just him coming to United. Yeah, but
I would have been nasty as well with Chelsea. No, I know United's another level up, but they wouldn't exactly been going, oh, yeah, off to Chelsea you go.
I just don't... I think if you... We're lucky, you know, Arsenal, United, Liverpool, we all think we're the biggest or the best. Mm. I don't think you can move to another club and almost feel like you're going up. You can leave and go down. Oh, the fans are okay with that. But if, you know, someone from United... Tevez goes from United to City. Even Inci. It wasn't from United to Liverpool,
but it was,
you see Michael's situation now with sort of...
Fans never forgive you, they're mad, aren't they? Fans. Yes. Even if a club is getting you out the door, but you can't go and sign for another
That's the thing with me with Palace.
You moved to Burnley, didn't you?
I did. It's brilliant. It's brilliant because I remember when I left... The thing is, when I left Arsenal, I didn't know it was happening. Remember I mentioned the film Goodfellas? Remember the bit in Goodfellas? where Joe Pesci thinks he's going in to get made.
Yeah.
It's shot. I remember I was in... I had to meet Arsenal because, you know what I mean? It was that season. It was the Reebok season, I called it. It wasn't a great season, but then in the end, I got called. I was in the squad, 98. And then I got injured. So then I was doing the television. And I remember David Dean calling me and saying, me and the boss are in Paris. You know, you know, come and meet us, we can, you know, have a chat and this and that. And I said, but my, the arrogance or the naivety of me was like, oh yeah, I'm going to see the boss and Mr. Dean, it's cool. And so I go and see them.
There's a movie here or something.
I go and see them, and still, this is why I mentioned Joe Pesci. I walk in the room, and as soon as I sit in the room and I see the boss's face and then I see David Dean, he's almost welling up in that. And I thought, oh, they're going to whack me. I've come in, they're going to whack me. I'm out the door. I didn't expect to leave because I was always going to retire in 2000. So then obviously I went to West Ham and Forest on loan and then Celtic. But it was when I got to Burnley with Stan Ternent. He was the first coach when I was at Palace that really used to sit me down afterwards, draw it out, what runs you're meant to make, why you have to hold the ball here, why you have to make sure you hit a target when you're going, you're like, all this sort of stuff. So he said, listen here, I know it's not gone too well at Celtic because Barnsley was having a night at Celtic. You know what I mean? I've got a good bunch of lads here. Really good
great
bunch
lads,
of lads.
Yeah.
They were great lads. Yeah. But seriously, great lads. And he said, I think if you come, you know what I mean? It was a second division as well. It was a second division championship. If you come, I think we can do it. And I went there. It was the best, like, 6-7 months of my career. It went full circle for me because all of a sudden you're back down to getting changed in not great changing rooms. Yeah. And it was, like, really hardcore. It felt brought me back
like
to Sunday.
Football.
Yes, it was
proper football.
Proper football.
It's shocking, isn't it?
But the thing with it was is the players and the camaraderie of that for me to end. Because the way it went, I had 4 clubs in one season. You know, just getting ready to leave. And so by the time I finished, we got promotion at Burnley. This is why I got such a nice vibe with Burnley. It kind of gave me something at the end because, like, the way I got hit at Arsenal,
Paris.
And even when I left,
Paris is nice. Yeah. At least it happened in Paris.
But even when I left Palace, I didn't instigate any move. It just happened really quickly over a kind of a weekend and stuff.
You mentioned getting shark riding, Jimmy. Even when I left, remember I went to Celtic. Celtic, listen, iconic, amazing club. But you leave United and I go up to Celtic and it's again, you got the stadium's amazing. But I hadn't really seen the training ground. Yeah. I know this, I'm going back a few years now, they have a good one now. Mm. But I was in the dressing room with Celtic and we get changed. And I've been at United. You change to Celtic Park and you drive to the training ground.
Yeah.
The pitch, you know, boots and your gear. One of us would drive, 3 or 4 of us in the car. We all drive down and this is Celtic train. It could be, obviously, generally it was fucking raining up there. All get back in the car and drive back in the car. Like, all of a sudden you're going, this is different.
But it's different.
I didn't kick a ball at Celtic, I was injured all the time. But what I did enjoy, for all my comfort zone at United, and I loved every minute of my time at United, it was good to be in another dressing room for 6 months.
Yeah.
Just a new experience. The Celtic lads were all, honestly, one or two idiots. But generally speaking, hey, they're all great lads. But I did, I mixed with different lads, different dynamics. So it was, I really enjoyed my time at Celtic.
I had a great time.
In terms of a different dressing room.
Yeah. Mm.
Did you enjoy wish, that? I mean, I never wish I played for another team. I'm sure you're the same. But in terms of the job we do now, that sort of other experience of seeing something, rather than always being in that United bubble or Liverpool bubble, different sort of ideas, different way of doing things. I do think what that would have been like, maybe to have played for, you know, 2 or 3 different clubs, at sort of maybe even at different levels to get a sort of...
But you're from the area, lads. It would have been like, so hard for you, unless you're getting forced out the door.
Yes. I think it would have been impossible for me to play for another club, I feel, at the end. Towards the end, once I got past 32, I was retiring.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just don't feel like...
But I had that option, lads. Remember, I spoke to Everton, Bolton, and a couple of other teams. But again, I had that mindset, which is crazy, really, because a club is forcing you out the door.
Yes.
And you feel you can't sign for another team.
Yeah.
Everton would have been a good move for me at the time.
Yeah.
Location, the family, and obviously Everton, David Moyes, huge respect for him. But you end up like, and obviously Celtic was, but you know, Celtic was another option. It was great. But I felt I couldn't go to another English team. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
When they're forced.
Well, that's loyalty, isn't it? Yeah. That is loyalty.
Yeah, but when it comes to the time, no matter what you've done, and like maybe me going into that meeting with Arsene Wenger and David Dean with an arrogance and a naivety of, well, you know what I mean? I've done so well. I'm going to be fine. I'm going to retire in 2000, so I don't know what they want to see. It's just like the ruthlessness.
But what exactly did they say to you, Ridey? What did they say to you?
Well, it was Mr. Dean was the one who started talking about, listen, Ian, we're doing different things. You're getting to that stage. You know, I had the injury, so it was. And he's saying, you know, we're going to be bringing people in. You're not going to be playing as often as you like. And this is before.
So
this
could
is
you stay, though? Did you still have another year? What was your contract?
Yeah, my contract was till 2000. Yeah. That is when obviously Patrick was there, and Anelka had come, and that made me realise, yes, I haven't got long when you watch him play. But then the plan was, remember, Thierry was coming, Kanu was in, he had all these things going around, so I didn't even realise, even after winning the double, that you know, I'm like,
you're finished.
Yeah,
I'm finished there. It's horrible because, like I said, I walked into the room and then you walk out of that room, my whole world has changed because I'm no longer at Arsenal where I feel like I was in the bosom of something.
Lads, I make the point, and I keep going on about, Yap was here a few weeks ago. I generally have no problem when a club says to a player, it's the game we're in, but you're getting called to Paris and they're trying to have a chat. And to me, at least that's kind of respectful.
Yeah.
I was already in France.
Right, but they sat down and had a bit of a chat.
From London.
I put myself, I look, I hear Yap, I heard Incy, I go back to my own stuff. Mm. I'm getting called into a meeting with Ferguson and Gill. And before I sit down there, give me that piece of paper there. Give us that, I know there are your questions. Before I sit down, they go, here we go. We've already got prepared a statement. Would you like to read this?
Nah, that's so bad.
Wow.
So this is my issue. Not a player has to leave a club, but at least Arsenal is saying to you, listen, and I'm reading the same. Mm. We'd like to thank Roy for his, remember, 11 and a half years. And I'm reading it. And just, you know,
Jesus.
We've already prepared a statement.
That's cold, isn't it?
Yeah,
but I'll tell you when I realised. James.
And they had the years wrong, Roy.
Yeah.
They had the years wrong.
Wow, that's bad.
All about mafia and you getting shot in the back of the head. I mean,
but that's being valued, isn't it? But,
all they just said to me, like, again, Yap was saying, I'm meeting 10 minutes at the service station. I always think, imagine Rafa Benitez ringing Gerrard going, I'll meet you 10 minutes at the service station in Liverpool. You're going, what? Gerrard?
Yeah, but what happened with me was when I realised...
You're at the door in 10 minutes. Yeah. I meet you at the golf course in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I realised is when that same... So when we finished our meeting, that same day, I had to meet Peter Storymore from West Ham later that day. So it was all sorted. It wasn't like
you
I was...
You've got no time to think.
No, it was all
fair,
sorted.
That was back in the day because I used to go in quite a bit with the young players that would be released from United, being the PFA rep at the time when I was captain. Sometimes Roy would go. I would go in to sit with the young player with Sir Alex, and he was obviously letting them go.
Right.
And I knew before they went in, they weren't maybe quite sure. But what he always used to have is a traditional principle. He used to always have a club for them ready to speak to.
Oh, okay.
So he'd go into the room and he'd say, look, you know, unfortunately, you've got these players in front of you. Mm. I'm not going to give you the opportunities, but you're going to have a great professional career in the game. And, you know, I want you to have a great professional career in the game. I've got a couple of people I'd like you to speak to because I think they'd be good moves for you. And I'd then go out. That's how we would do it with young players. Yeah. But then you're saying that was a traditional principle. They'd find the club for you.
Mm. My last game at City, so I was trying to get out on loan. Obviously, I'd been there 7-8 years. My last game, I got a phone call saying the goalkeeper coach isn't available for the Arsenal game, so can you take the defenders' warm-up? That was literally my thing. I was doing the defenders' warm-up.
So, Jill, at the end...
At the end, they come up and was like, oh, we forgot to tell the girls you were leaving, but if you need anything... Let us know, and that was my last day at the club.
So
I'm still sad about it now.
You can't hold on to that stuff.
No, I am.
Let that go.
It's you.
Come on.
What people underestimate with what you've done there is that you've had to play in the Euros as well, and I remember the game you played against Spain. It was amazing. But all the upheaval, because then you have to go and find a club to play, because Serena said to you, listen, you need to go and play or else you're not going to play. And you finished at the end of that season. You finished it, the Euros.
Yeah.
So wasn't you thinking? Was you feeling desperate?
To go out on loan?
Was you playing enough games to find a loan? Did they find a loan for you?
No, I had to find a loan. Jeez. And I remember I could have got out on the Friday to get a full 90 on the Sunday, which I didn't really agree with because I always think you should train and stuff like that. But the team were like, come in and you'll play on the Sunday. And they still kept hold of us and said, you're not going to play a minute against Arsenal. But they just kept us for the sake of keeping us. But that's what I mean. Like, I think you realise when you speak about Man United, Arsenal, in football, you are just another cog in a system. And I think although you have this massive loyalty to the club, you've given it your all and everything, at the end of the day, when it's your time, they should do. That's why I always think if I went into management and coaching, I would make every player feel valued.
You're talking about the club sort of letting you go. We never had that. We stayed.
You need clubs to need, won't you?
I know. I was more the other way because we'd been there for that long. The club said to me about staying for a year, but I didn't want to.
Oh, they wanted me to stay.
That's my point. So it was almost like a flip side of that. Because you've only been at one club, you've almost got loyalty to the club, but almost, what am I trying to think? I was that ingrained.
I felt embarrassed and ashamed at the end. I just had to leave.
I didn't want to play for another year thinking...
I agree with that.
I didn't want supporters. Because you felt like you knew every supporter and it was your club. I was thinking, if I stay another year, and as a defender, if you have a bad game...
It's not just tarnished his reputation.
It was more a case of... You know that feeling that we've all got as fans when you watch your own team and the team comes in and you go, oh, he's playing. Do you know what I mean? And I was thinking, oh, I don't want the lads going on the coach and away game.
Well, they're not taking that previously.
Maybe a few years ago, but it was really getting closer to
home now. So, was that your mindset, James? You're thinking that in that time?
I just didn't want to let the club down or people be thinking.
Wow.
So I could have stayed for a year, but it was like, no, I've got to go now, where I'm just about okay.
Yeah.
I think it's probably like being a defender as well. If you're a midfield player, you can come on sub, you can get brought off. Yeah. As a centre-back, you're not getting brought off or taken off. You know, I just thought, no, I've got to get
It's horrible.
Now. Let's finish with one question.
Go on.
And it's the question that I actually asked at the beginning.
Because you never answered it.
And I'm here an hour later.
We're in Paris for an hour.
Who should have the final say on a player coming into a football club?
Oh, but it's a silly question, and it doesn't have to...
Who has the veto?
Life's not like that.
Who has the veto? One or the other, is it?
Right, OK. Who has the veto at a football club on a transfer? That does exist. Who has the veto? Well, I'm going to say the sporting director.
Well, who's going to get the blame when it goes wrong?
I'm going to say the sporting director. They're in charge of sport at the club.
I'd probably agree with that.
You disagreed on something?
No.
No, sorry.
I think for a manager managing the team and how you want, the manager should have...
Pep, who do you think at Man City has the final? Do you think Pep definitely trusts the people above
him? I think Pep and Klopp
are
the exceptions.
Right, OK.
Where you've got complete success, you've got stability, you've got a great manager, you've got a system that works. I'm talking about the clubs that, to be fair, are in the churn.
Who brought Phillips to Man City?
The other 75...
Who decided to bring Phillips to Man City? So we're talking about Man City getting everything right.
Yeah, but then we saw Pep the other day apologising.
I know, but I'm just saying, did he want him in? For not really, he's not really played him, obviously.
Well, who's the responsible guy for the signs? I always say this, who is the guy that brought that guy in? I think that's the sporting director's got to take that responsibility.
Right.
Kyle Walker knocked on Phillip's door on England camp.
Yeah.
I'm saying manager. I'm sticking to manager.
Sticking to it?
Yeah.
After everything you've heard?
I'm sticking to it.
I don't know. I don't know.
You own a football club now, and you're the owner. It's your money. It's
no manager should ever have a player he doesn't want.
It's your 50 million wages. It's your 100 million pound fee. Who are you trusting that to?
I think there should be parameters around...
Who are you trusting that with?
Age, you know, price. I get all that. But it can't be, I like him and I don't
but
like
Jamie,
him.
But Jamie, do you know the reason? I tell you now, this is the difficulty, because that's how I...
Did you just call me then?
Jamie. Right, Jamie.
Never happened before.
Jamie. Right, you sat there as an owner.
Serious.
You've got a budget you're going to spend. Imagine if you're the owner of a business, right? You don't ordinarily allow other people to control the major thing that you're buying. You always have a major sort of like control on that. As an owner, you want someone to manage your money, or else they're going to waste a lot of money in football. Who is that person that the owner trusts at a football club? Is it the manager? Is it the head of recruitment? Is
What's
it the sporting
your decision when you brought lads
Is it the sporting director, or is it themselves?
Who brought the managers in at Salford?
The managers was me. The manager was me, Karen and Chris.
So if you're on about getting players right or wrong, do you think you brought managers in and go, what was I thinking?
When I look at the managers that we brought in, I think that, you know, while some of them may not have been successful, Richie, obviously, we sacked, but he went on to win a league. Graham.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if they win a league somewhere else. That's not good to you, is it?
Yeah, no, but my point is, it's not. Sometimes a manager doesn't work at a club.
That's right. And sometimes a player doesn't work at a club. Yeah. Despite all
but
your
who
homework.
Is the
you knew Richie well, and you worked with Richie.
But who is the responsible individual for signings at a football club? It's a really simple question, this. It's really simple.
It's not a simple question.
It is.
I don't think it is.
How can you say that's a simple question? I'm still talking.
You're the owner. You're the owner of a football club.
Everyone's got to be aligned.
That never happens. That very rarely happens. Where five of you are all on the page. The owner, the finance director, the sporting director, the head of recruitment, and the manager. All five.
Well, you said before, the owner had a veto, the manager had a veto, and the CEO
vetoes.
Had a veto. So if one of them said no, you didn't sign the player.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, CEO and finance director would always be on money. So it'd be budget. So that's quite clear.
So if one of them says no.
Right, but that's money.
So if the manager says no, do you still sign them?
No, I'm not saying you do. My point is,
I'm more confused. You're confusing me,
Gal. No, I'm not saying you do.
If the manager...
but if you want to bring a player in, that player walks through the doors of your club,
right? Who is responsible person? Who is the responsible individual? I'm saying that the sporting director, if that player isn't, they don't think right for that club, they should have the say and stop it.
Yeah, and what if he brings in lots of players and it's not working out? Do they get sacked?
Oh, absolutely. They're accountable.
Right.
You need accountable
do they get
person.
Sacked? I get it. But well, do they get sacked every 6 months
give,
like a manager?
You need to give them a period of time, obviously.
Right. I just think, as a club, from top to bottom, you have to have a profile. So it might be, OK, we don't buy players above the age of 26. Mm. They've got to have, so, this much experience. Mm. You may have played maybe 150, 200 games. So there's criteria. I get all that. Now, if three or four players meet that criteria for the club, the manager then should pick which one.
Yes.
Right.
That's fine. Yes. My point is, you said a story before about Jurgen Klopp and Mo Salah. Jurgen Klopp did not want to sign Mo Salah, but the club, sporting director, head of recruitment, wanted to sign him. He said, we must bring him in. Jurgen Klopp has said, OK, I trust you.
Yeah.
OK.
Yeah, so he trusts them. It's not saying... So the club haven't said to him, you're not having him. He's still got to go...
If the sporting director and the head of recruitment say, we shouldn't sign this player, this is not the right profile, but Jurgen Klopp wanted to bring them in, would that player come through the door still?
No, my point is, that's my point. So it's got to, there's got to be a
criteria. It's a really simple question, this.
It doesn't feel simple, bro.
It's really simple. Who is the responsible person for...
Where's my chocolate?
Who's the responsible person for a player coming through the door and signing that £100 million contract and a £70 million fee at a football club? Who is that person?
It's not simple because, like, there's a lot of things that...
I know there's conversations and opinions. Who is the person that goes to the owner and says, go for it?
Have you noticed that the only female...
Everyone's got to be together.
The only female answered the question.
That's you'd asked me a few years ago, but it's the manager. But I'm going towards that direction.
I think we're finding here the difficulties now by not being able to answer this question ourselves even, clearly. The owners and the sporting directors and managers have at a football club to try and work out that
dynamic. What if you don't have a director of football?
I think it's very simple. You have a criteria... Your finances, and then the sporting director brings two or three options. So as a club,
of the player,
top to bottom, when we're signing players, we want to buy young players, obviously, for longevity. We've got a certain budget. Right, they're the two or three options.
And then the manager should
pick them. And then the manager goes,
I'll have him.
I prefer that one.
Yeah, that's what I'm going with that.
So manager.
Manager.
There's no way a manager should ever be given a player or have to have a player he doesn't want because eventually...
So Mo Salah.
No, because he trusts that situation.
No, Mo Salah. You just said a manager doesn't want to play, doesn't want, but Jurgen Klopp didn't want Mo Salah.
No, but he obviously doesn't think he's a bad player. What I'm saying is he probably knows a player better, but the criteria of the club have been following him for 5 or 6 years, and he's had trust there because of a relationship.
So, sporting director.
Manager.
Both.
Oh,
that's splitting.
Nice one, James.
That's splitting.
No, go through that again, Gal. Go through that again.
Right, that's the end of our transfer window special.
Jeez, that was...
I feel like everyone got a lot off the chest there.
Yeah. The boot speaks for itself.
Yeah.
But like, Jamie, you're right, it's both.
It speaks for itself.
It speaks for itself, Jill. Look at it, it's screaming, no one can
so
hear.
Funny.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.